Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Ally. Ally, powered by Verizon Locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company, in collaboration with Ally, a membership-only community workspace for creators. Each location is a community curated powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Ally, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs. And now, on to my interview with George Lois.
Tommy says, I can't do that. So what do you mean I can't do that? George, I can't. I mean, I'll look like a fool. So I'm saying, Tommy, you only got one chance to be famous. This is it.
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music. Let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study they move, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
Welcome to the Silent Giants Podcast, a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. To keep up with the latest on the show, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast. To keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is the 87-year-old legendary American art director, designer, and author, George Lois. George is one of the greatest advertising minds of the 20th century, serving as Esquire magazine's art director throughout the 1960s and creating over 60 covers for the magazine. One of his famous covers of Esquire that you may know is his depiction of Muhammad Ali at St. Sebastian. He also launched MTV with his iconic I Want My MTV campaign and created the advertising strategy that made Tommy Hilfiger a fashion household name. He even created the popular phrase, "If you got it, flaunt it." George is also the author of Damn Good Advice for People with Talent, which is an amazing book that I highly recommend for people working in creative industries. In this interview, I chat with George in his Manhattan apartment, and he shares amazing stories about his upbringing in New York City, his college years at Pratt. He tells me the stories behind his iconic work for Tommy and MTV, how he met Muhammad Ali, and so much more. George's life and work is absolutely remarkable. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to the legendary art director, designer, author, my friend, the silent giant, George Lois.
Okay, so.
What's going on, George?
I'm 80 motherfucking seven.
Hey, I was born in 87.
Right. I'm 87. And we're still working. I had my own ad agency when I was 28.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a big fucking deal because it's funny. There's something it's something called a creative evolution in advertising that was very famous in the late 50s and 60s. Right?
Okay.
And it wasn't really a creative evolution until I started. There was one important ad agency, my name was Doyle Dane Birnbach, and that's where.
You know, I was reading up on you, and I saw that you were a ball player.
And I played more fucking basketball than any man that ever lived.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
The what?
Who was your favorite player growing up?
I mean, my best friends were Bill Bradley and Dave DeBuscher.
Oh.
Those guys.
You know.
my best friends in baseball were fucking Mickey Mantle. And I'm not shitting you.
The New York City legends.
Yeah, Mickey fucking Mantle, you know. And the other guy that was a big, important guy, who's a great friend of mine, was Joe Namath.
Another, you know, local legend.
Yeah.
Local guy up
and
the street.
And, of course, fucking Muhammad motherfucking Ali. you know what I mean? I mean, so when it comes to sports, I've been around it all the time. I've photographed it. I've done commercials with it.
But what position did you play?
Huh?
What position did you play?
Well, I was a guard because I played with some brawny motherfucking guys, you know. So I was a guard, but
did you get the? I read up that you had the opportunity to go to Syracuse to play basketball. Is this true?
Oh yeah. No, I played more fucking basketball than any man that ever lived. This was really important because when I first met my wife, it was the first day of at Pratt Institute. It was a art school, basically. And I was offered a half scholarship for basketball and a half scholarship for art, which was kind of crazy. And I probably should have taken it. And my girlfriend who I met the first day at Pratt, she was offered a scholarship because she was actually she worked as a secretary for the head of the school, and they were given a scholarship for it. You know, like, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So she didn't take it, and I didn't take it, you know. And so we were, like, we canceled each other out, you know what I mean?
What drove your decision to not go to Syracuse and go to Pratt? Because being a ball player
designed courses. It was just an art. It was just art, which is okay. But I'm trying to make a living as an art director, because my father, because I'm a Greek, and my father expected me to take over his store.
What was his store?
He was a florist.
Okay.
I was going to a great high school. Great, great high school. I was so lucky.
What high school did you go to?
Huh?
What high school did you go to?
High School of Music and Art.
Where is that? Here in New York City?
Yeah.
Where about?
Very near City College, like 135th Street.
Okay.
And I really had to make a living. And I was lucky because...
Because what drove that decision to... did you know that you weren't going to make it in the NBA? Because obviously you had some
Yeah, I mean, no. The important thing is I had to get... You know, I'm not... You know... I wasn't that sure with myself in sports.
But you were confident with art.
But I needed... But the important thing was I needed a job because my father was a florist and he expected me. He was waiting for me to, he was shocked when he found out that I was going to school. In fact, the first day of school, I was supposed to go to a flower market with him. That's where you buy your flowers, you know. And and my father comes up to me, you know, in my bedroom, and he says, "George, what's wrong? I mean, it's Monday. It's flower market." And I said, "Pop, I'm starting college today." He said, "You're starting college? What kind of college?" I said, "It's an art college." "Art college?" He saw me drawing all the time, but he didn't really take me seriously. I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Okay." Oh, no. Then he said, "Did it cost any money?" I said, "Yeah. $200 or something like that." I said, "Where'd you get the money?" And I said, it was chip money. Chip money.
Yeah.
Dime. And back then, if you got a dime, you were doing good. I mean, that was a lot of money.
Oh, those were the days.
Back then. So he said, "Okay, you ought to go." He spoke in Greek. "Okay, you ought to go." And he kind of walked away, you know, 1:30, 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock, I think. Anyway, and he walked away kind of up in the Bronx, and he kind of staggered, and he realized that I wasn't going to be a florist.
Was he happy about it?
No, he was devastated. He thought he was, what a Greek boy is going to do is he's going to take care of his father, start something, and you, that's what you are.
I read your book, which is an amazing book.
Yeah.
And Damn Good Advice.
Yeah.
And Rule 117, you say, you'll never be the creative person you aspire to be if you don't know where it all came from. Where did your creativity come from?
Sure. Well, where it comes from is you have to understand the culture. You know, and you have to understand all culture, you know, to be a designer. But in any case, this whole thing with being Greek, the other problem I had, and by the way, that first day of school I'm talking about,
yeah.
That first day there, and there I was, is when I saw my wife, my girlfriend, for the first time. And I saw her and I said, "Holy shit, that's my woman."
And she was attending Pratt as well?
Yeah, no. What was amazing is I had a scholarship and she had a scholarship to the same fucking school. And she didn't go to school and I didn't go to school. In other words, it was like fate. I mean, it was like, shit happened, you know. So,
because what was your major?
well, the major, my major was going to be art.
Art.
And our major was going to be art.
Did you, it's funny, I interviewed a woman by the name of Lucia Disrespinis.
Who?
Lucia Disrespinis. She attended Pratt as well in 1951. Yeah. She went for industrial design.
Oh, really? Huh? Yeah. It was
I don't know if you guys ran in the same circles. Yeah. Do you know a guy named Tom Rock?
Who?
Tom Rock.
Not really.
He was like the first black guy, one of the first black people to graduate from Pratt. But it was around the same time period. So I didn't know if the time overlapped.
The funniest fucking thing. I had to give a talk. I promised that I would give a talk. Oh no. I was getting an award from the Black Alumni of Pratt. Mm. Right? So here's what happened. I said, I had a situation once when I was a young man. This was when I had come home from Korea, and I told him a story, and they're listening, and I said, when I was in the army, there was a roll call, and I said the roll call was Jackson, you know, right here, you know, Southern schmucks, you know, Johnson, right here, right here. And then Lois, and I said, yo. And a captain comes up to me, and he said, what's with the yo, soldier? And I said, you know, Southern boys all say right here. But I'm from New York, so I say yo. And he says, and the captain said, oh, another New York Jew fag nigger lover. Right, so he said this, and I said this to
him. That's everything.
And I said it to the everybody. It was like, and I had a whole bunch of my buddies were there. So anyway, so I said, so he comes up to me afterward. It was a major in the Jim Crow South, Augusta, Georgia. I said, what it was, 1950. He said, oh, another New York Jew fag nigger lover, right? So I said, and he came right up to me here. And I said, go fuck yourself, sir. And I got a 14-week company punishment, and I went to Korea.
Because that's something about you that I have noticed throughout your work in advertising, and as you as a human being from interviews that I've seen, is that you are rebellious with a purpose. Do you think that's true?
Yeah.
Well, there's some people that are rebellious to just be rebellious.
It goes on. It goes on all the time. When I was in the army, when I was in Korea, I was a PFC, you know, Private E1, and a Private E2. And then one day I was a corporal. My wife would get a letter, corporal. And then a week later, she'd get a letter. I was a PFC again.
You'd be demoted?
Oh, yeah. I was a staff sergeant once. Maybe for two, only for about 2 weeks. Then she gets a letter, PFC again. And it's a time when your money was important. You know, you didn't have any money. You didn't have any money. Fuck you. You know what I mean? Fuck.
Where does that that rebellious spirit come from? Because I also like to think when I see your art, I think what makes you very special as a creative is that your art is a true depiction of who you are as a person. It's a depiction of your life.
Yeah, sure.
So whether it's MTV, whether it's Tommy, you channeled George Lois.
Yeah. Whether it's Reuben Carter.
Yeah. Oof. Let's talk about that.
Hello.
All that is a representation of who you are as a person. Where does that rebellious spirit come from?
I don't know. I mean, in a crazy way, even though I'm Greek, I grew up in a racist Irish neighborhood, which is redundant.
What neighborhood did you grow up in?
In the Bronx, you know, West Bronx.
Okay.
Yeah. And in a crazy way, racism was the most terrible thing in the world, you know. I ain't going to put up with that shit. In fact, one of the proudest things I always felt about my father was a Greek immigrant. He grew up in... He came to America when he was 13. But he was doing well. He was making a living. It was a time of... the Depression.
Yeah.
And I worked... when I wasn't playing ball, I worked... every day of my life in the store. I mean, doing all kinds of stuff, but basically, I delivered flowers.
And what did that teach you?
Well, even before that, my father was a Greek immigrant, right?
Yeah.
He had like a 2 years of school in Greece, and he hires a young black kid, and a priest says the priest says you gotta get rid of the N-word. And my father said, no way. No way. He's a good young kid. Works hard. No. And he wouldn't fire him. You know, I mean, I can't, but he literally wouldn't fire him. It was like, and I remember my sisters, we used to make like $5 a week from the church. on Sundays. And the priest came up. He came up and he said to Mr. Lois.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A Catholic priest, if you don't get rid of the black person, you know, we can't work together again. And it was an important account. And my father said, no, right? And my sisters said, two sisters, he said, Papa was wrong to do that. I said, no, it's the greatest thing in the world. The most important thing, that he's fantastic. You know, and my sisters were so upset because we lost
the account.
The account, you know. So I said, my God, here's this young peasant kid understanding racism. It's unbelievable. And that was one of the things that really, I'll never forget that.
Because that's something that probably you've applied in your own professional life, you know, or in your life in general.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of the Reuben Carter thing was, of course, important, you know, was a big deal, you know.
Because I think that's what makes your art and your spin on advertising so amazing. That it stands for something. It's bigger than just.
Oh yeah.
Feel with the some of the works that you've done, you know, whether it's with MTV or launching Tommy Hilfiger, you've really added a rock star approach to.
Yeah, well, I always understood how to do commercials with athletes.
You kind of have an art for controversy.
Yeah.
There's art and controversy.
Yeah, sure. But I really became very well known for the commercials I did with athletes. And athletes love doing commercials for me because I always, it was never somebody saying, well, I drink this kind of coffee because I got you bullshit. It was always MTV was a dog. I mean, it was dead in the water. Dead. I had done a commercial when I was young, and I called it "I Want My Mapo." I want my Mapo. And MTV was like literally dead. When I say dead, they were dead. They were operating for a year without any, without one cable operator. They were talking to nobody. I said to them, do you remember that commercial of I Want My Maple? And what it was is...
Mickey Mantle.
I want my maple.
Johnny Unitas.
I want my maple.
Oscar Robertson.
I want my maple.
Ray Nitschke.
I want my maple.
Will Chamberlain.
I want my maple.
Mapo, the delectable oatmeal that heroes cry for. It comes in flavors, and now it's making the bowl. Don Meredith.
I want my maple. I want it.
Seven times in the commercial, you know, I said, I want my Mapo, you know, and I took it, you know, and then it was Will Chamberlain, and then it was, I used five or six athletes, and they fucking loved it, because Mickey called me up one day, Ed called me up, George, Mickey, I thought you were in Detroit. Aren't you in Detroit for day game today? He said, I just wanted to tell you, everywhere I go, I want my Mapo, I want my Mapo, I want my Mapo. Go fuck yourself. But everything I did with athletes, they fucking loved it, because it was always, they always were hot shit motherfuckers. You know what I mean? There was always some kind of a wild thing going on. And of course, my relationship with fucking Ali is pretty fucking wild, you know?
You know, I always say, I tell this to all my friends, you are who you hang around. And you seem to have always hung out with people that are very similar to you. And Ali was also a person who mastered rebellious with a purpose.
Yeah, Ali.
How'd you guys meet?
Actually, when he was Cassius Clay, there was a sports writer by the name Dick Schaap.
Oh, Dick Schaap. Yeah, he's legendary.
Yeah. He died when he was young. He died when he was 50.
Yeah.
And he was a great man, my best buddy. And Schaap was following his... the kid's career when he was 13, believe it or not. And he said, hey George, there's this great fucking kid, he's 13 years old. He's coming down. Oh, and he's coming down. He's going to be in the Olympics. I want you to meet him. Okay. And somehow I met him by doing something. I forgot. And he said, you know, I'm the greatest that ever lived. You know, I've had what he got. But he had that. That poor shit then, you know, where'd he go? And then he said, I'm going to go see Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, because I love Sugar Ray Robinson. And he said, I'm going to walk all the way to Harlem. He had a nightclub up there. So he's walking, and we said, well, we'll take you. Schaap said, we'll take you. What he goes, no. And then anyway, he walked, and And what was amazing was he was furious because Sugar never saw him. He was furious.
Oh, why didn't he see him? You don't know?
No. Well, Sugar, you know, he was a
big time guy himself.
Big time motherfucker. You know, and he was furious. I'm telling you, I never saw anything like him. And
because how did you guys do the famous Esquire shoot with the arrows?
You got to understand that Muhammad Ali, at that point, he was Muhammad Ali, was up for trial. The Supreme Court had given him five-year sentence. So what was happening with him actually is I call him one day. And I said, Muhammad, your ass is still grass. What I want to do is I want to do a cover, Esquire cover. You got to come to New York. You know, bring your pretty white shoes. You know, he had kangaroo white shoes. You know, white boxing shoes. And I want to take a picture as a martyr. And I said, Muhammad, okay, here's the way I want you to pose. Because I got a painting from St. Sebastian, and I said, I want you to, and I show him a postcard, and I said, I want you to pose just like this, you know, where your legs are strong, but your head's in agony. And I want you, and he looks at the postcard, and he says, hey, George, this cat's a Christian.
Oh, interesting point.
And I said, no shit. Saint motherfucking Sebastian. He said, I can't do that. I can't do that. And he's serious about it. You know, he can't act like a Christian.
Right.
So I said, George, I can't. I said, can you call Elijah Muhammad, who was the...
Oh, the head of the...
Yeah. He said, yeah. So he gets him on the phone, and then he says, George wants to talk to you. Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Yeah. I said, okay. Oh, I get on the phone with him, and I said, I just want to tell you that this could be very important for cover, blah, 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 blah. And I just kind of bullshitted, and he said, tell Muhammad he has my permission. He has my permission. So what I did is I lined him up, and what was great about it was he's saying, he's posing, right, the way I... And I said, hey, George. So what? Hey, George. I said, what the fuck do you want? What's wrong with you? Get the fuck out of here. Hey, George. So what he does is he, we're looking at him sideways, and he actually said, "Hey, George," and he takes his hands away, and he starts pointing to people in the government that are trying to put him in jail. So he literally made a move here, 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 and here. You know, it was the greatest thing I've ever seen. And he said, you know, Lyndon Johnson, General McNamara, and he names fucking six guys who were after his fucking ass, you know, and the place was in stitches. I mean, everybody was going crazy. It was like genius, if you know what I mean. Like a genius. But I'd always say to him, he'd say things like, "Hey, George, I'm with them someplace. Pennsylvania, he gave me his speed bag." You know, anyway. "Hey, George, I got the fastest left hand in history of boxing." For lightweight, you know, welterweight, maybe middleweight. "I got the fastest left hand in the history of fucking boxing. Any weight." I said, "Bullshit." And he said, "You want to see it?" I said, "Okay. You want to see it again?" That's the kind of humor the guy had. I mean, that's funny shit, you know.
Where did you learn to evoke emotion in people?
I mean, to me, it's street shit.
Explain street shit.
Yeah, it's the way, you know, it's the way you are. It's the way you are when you're in the streets. You know what I mean? It's
like with the famous Tommy Hilfiger ad, the Hangman ad. Is that street shit as well?
Like, well, you got to understand it. He was a young kid. It's a little hard to understand, but there was a guy by the name of an Indian from India who actually worked for Tommy, who was just a kid. This Indian guy, very smart guy, he understood branding, big name branding. So he said, "Can you do a commercial?" I said, "Yeah." And I do the commercial which I'm sure you know, Tommy says, "I can't do that." "So what do you mean I can't do that?" "George, I can't. I mean, I'll look like a fool." So I'm saying, Tommy, you've only got one chance to be famous. This is it. "I can't do it." "Tommy, you have to do it." "I can't do it." So he kept saying, "I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it." And he said I screamed at him. So the commercial, the ad, it basically said he was, who the fuck is Tommy Hilfiger? and that morning, it was actually a poster. And the poster goes up that day. I made sure it was a poster that came from the New York Post. And I call up the Post and I said, "Hey, do you guys know, the line became, it became a story in the New York Post that said, who the hell is Tommy Hilfiger?" And he literally, a week later, was on the Johnny Carson show. I mean, literally.
Where did the idea to come up with the Hangman ad even come from?
I must have seen a thing like that in something I saw, you know, when I was a kid or something. You know, I must have. All I know is I was saying, there's a fucking guy who's better, who's a sensational designer, and made him famous, that's all.
Wow.
And he, you know, he became a...
Huge.
No. Billionaire?
I'd say so, for sure.
Billionaire, I mean...
It's funny that I have a friend who's the archivist at Tommy Hilfiger now, and I went to the archive.
That's pretty funny.
And she's giving a tour. Shout out to my friend Rebecca Love, who's the archivist at Tommy. And she's giving a tour, and your work is hanging up in the Tommy archive. And she walks by and she says, oh, this was done by George Lois, his famous ad that blew up Tommy. How does that make you feel?
Well, what's interesting about Tommy is I've had... three people say that they did I Want My MTV. I've had people all over the place tell me they did something. Right?
Yeah.
Never with Tommy. He fucking, every time he has a chance, he fucking tells everybody what the fuck, what I did. Every time. Good kid. And I mean, for instance, there are people just all over the place say that they did what I did.
But you know what I say to that, George? You know what I say to that? It's almost like if Jay-Z, famous rapper, he says, I'm paraphrasing here, but if you made Hove, his nickname is Hove.
Yeah.
If you made Hove, make another one.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So if everyone says they can come up with an idea, well, let me see your other ones. Let me see your other ones. Let me see your other ones. I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
That I ask every person on the show, because everyone in life, I've interviewed some amazing people who've achieved a lot of amazing, great things, you being one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't understand to achieve greatness, you have to make sacrifices. What things have you sacrificed in your career to achieve greatness?
No, I don't. I'm always on the attack. I don't think I've sacrificed anything. I'm very lucky because my wife is a designer and actually an artist. And she always understood when I couldn't get home. You know, I had shit to do. You know, most women would have said, you do, never. So I never had that kind of problem. I can't think of it.
George, it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here on the show. And I appreciate everything you've done for popular culture. Take care, George.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of Silent Giants and to our special guest, George Lois. And before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, OPP, a show that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I provide you the link to that in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge, signing off. Till next time.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.